Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher, and welcome to my show. I am so happy you're here. I don't think the weather is ever going to change here, do you? I don't know about it where you are, but it's still in the high 80s today, and I'm really longing to wear a sweater. So I always love to talk to all of my guests that come on my show, and they can tell us about the weather where they live, and I can just sit here and dream for an hour, and we can talk about things that are I might not even find in my everyday life in my area. So on my show, I bring you things that I find, you know, have a uniqueness to them, something that really intrigues me. And if I'm interested, I thought you might be also. So today, my guest is Gary Branga of Clippies, and we'll be speaking to him in a few moments about his interesting journey about bringing a product to market. Wow, you know, that really intrigues me because I've got a ton of stuff, at least. Well, not a ton. Let's say I have 10 products that I've outlined and I have up on poster boards everywhere, and that's as far as they've gotten. So it'd be great to talk to Gary today. On my show every week, I'm also talking about a product that I found to help improve the quality of life. And each month, I'll talk about them briefly, just sharing my experience. So today I'm talking about memory. What we can remember about names and places and, you know, what we had for lunch yesterday. The company I was drawn to is Quincy Bioscience, and the product is called Prevagen Professional. The reason I started taking it was after several stressful live events I had in life, and in the past few years, it just got worse and worse. We've been through hurricanes and losing everything and so much devastation in the past several years. I found I was forgetting things, and all of my kids would say to me, "What is your problem? I just told you, or aren't you paying attention to me?" When I really was. I take one capsule of Prevagen Professional 40 milligrams. They also have a 10 milligram if you're interested. And I only take one capsule a day. And I started to remember things. I don't even remember that pun on that. But I don't remember the last time that I was saying to the kids something like, "I don't remember you telling me that." So I really do find that it is working. The product Prevagen Professional, it has a unique ingredient to help improve short-term memory and word recall. I really find that's very important because it's some of the first signs of we are having trouble in our brain. And everybody will always say, "Well, I'll wait until it's a real problem, then I'll go see the doctor," or "I'm not noticing it." And it's really difficult to be able to, once you cross that threshold, to be able to keep and maintain your brain function. It does not interfere with any other supplements or medications, and that is super important because we're taking so many medications these days. Doctor changes one day, another doctor gives you one another day. But it does not interact with anything. And it has no common allergen, which is very important for me because I'm highly allergic to seafood and shellfish, and I don't like to take soy. And research has shown it can reduce brain cell loss up to 50%. And I really like you to listen to that again. It says it can reduce brain cell loss up to 50%. You know, I think that's a really great margin. When you get to this 50% point, are you going to wait until you're 75% loss to start doing something? Or are you going to wait until you're 50% loss and say, "Well, it says 50%, maybe I'll get it all back and I'll be back to 100%. That's not the way it works. So I would encourage you to give them a call and also ask them how Prevagen Professional may help you. Their telephone number is 888-895-6463. They have tons of clinical studies and reports on how it has helped others. You just need to ask them for some help. When you call that number, if you tell them that you've heard it on the radio show and you have some questions, they would be happy to connect you with someone else that would be able to answer those questions for you. You know, I know it works for me, and I just wanted to share this with you. So So again, the company is Quincy Bioscience. The product is Prevagen Professional. Their telephone number is 888-895-6463. And I really think you might be interested in checking it out and seeing if it may help you. You never know. So today, my guest is Gary Bronga. He is the president of Clippies Incorporated, which is a company he started 15 years ago with just an idea, a computer, and $500. Now, I'm super interested in that because I don't know how many times I've had ideas, a computer, and money, and still didn't get anywhere. And his products are sold in more than 1,000 retail stores across the U.S., Canada, and countries overseas. He is a speaker, mentor, and author. And today we're going to be talking about his book, Bringing a Product to Market from Your Home with $500 and an Idea Can Make You Millions. You know, the book is really fabulous. I did read it, and it's loaded with important information that is necessary to developing any of your ideas. You know, so if you hope to bring a or build a business, from home, we would like to welcome Gary to the show, and he'll be able to give us tons of tips. So, Gary, are you with us?
Yes, I am. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for being with us today, Gary. You know, I just, as we had said before, I just absolutely loved the uniqueness of your book. The first thing, the contact I had with you was reading your book, and it was so concise. I didn't have to read, you know, 10 or 15 different books. You didn't say, here, go here for more information. It was like you said, here's the question, here's the answer, here's what I did, and you're on to the next topic. You know, so I'm really thrilled to have you on the show today.
Thank you. I tried to write it in a very conversational manner, just as I was as I would be talking to an individual that was interested in doing what I did. I set out to write a book that I would have loved to had when I first started out.
You know, it's a really challenge, don't you think? So can you tell us about how you had an idea? I mean, obviously you were working then. Now a lot of people are really on the unemployment line and they haven't been working, so they have ideas too. How you did it then and how people might try to do it now, is that different?
No, not at all. What happened to me was when I was working my day job, we had a water cooler type of conversation, myself and several other people, and we did not like the way we wore our ID badges. They got in the way. One person mentioned how a office mate got a lanyard caught in a shredder. It was very dangerous.
Yes, it is.
Those of us in security didn't like how they twisted around and you couldn't see the people if they belonged in a certain area and whatnot. And about that same time, a company came by and handed us a lapel pin as a promotion. And so I put it on my shirt, and we talked for a few more minutes, and then we broke up. And then as I walked back, I had my badge in my hand, and I went to put it back on my shirt, and that's where I had put the lapel pin. So I snapped it to the lapel pin, and an idea came to me that I could put a space with a bar, and that clip could fit right inside of it, and I could do custom designs with company logos and slogans and whatnot, and that was a start.
So for our listeners, that is your product line, Clippies. So can you tell us what it looks like? What it's about?
If you wear an ID badge, you're gonna love the idea. It's worn like a lapel pin, but it allows the attachment of your little alligator clip on normal ID badges. And because it's a lapel pin, I can do company logos, I can do slogans, I can do titles, like I have RN and LPN in the medical, or I have secretary, or I have a personal assistant, and different types of that we actually keep them in stock, and we do customs by design.
That really sounds interesting. So then, how did the book come about? Is the book about your process, or is how did you even do everything? Did you stumble and fall? Did you have any really instances where you had to learn everything on your own?
Well, I did. It's been 15 years now, and they just didn't have the resources that they do today, the Small Business Developmental Council and different things that different community colleges have, entrepreneur programs. At that point, I basically had to learn on my own, a lot through trial and error. And once I did get some press, and I got in the local paper and some newspapers about bringing my idea, people contacted me, and they had ideas of their own. So I started with a booklet, and it was called 48 Great Tips for Bringing a New Product to Market from Your Home, with things I had learned. And that booklet's available free on my website.
That's so interesting. You know, like I was saying before, I have ideas. And sometimes when, you know, I look at something, I may say, you know, I could do that better. And then I sit down and I'll just sketch something out and I'll put a name on it and a little tagline and then maybe a paragraph about how that would help others. But then I set it to the side. And, you know, I think everybody has those ideas these days. How do you even know whether that's something you even should bother with? I mean, how many of us all have crazy ideas, you know? Like how we can, you know, everybody says, well, you don't want to make it, you know, if a wheel goes around, you can't change it. Well, I think you can change a lot of things.
You can. The first thing is that you learn very quickly not to give much weight to the people that tell you you can't and start listening to the people that did it. And I want everyone to know that starting your own business is possible. And, you know, and it is done every day. And I don't know how many people, there's probably people listening right now to us that had an idea, they thought it was really good, but they didn't do anything. And then only a year later, a year and a half later, they see it in the marketplace.
Yes.
The difference between their idea and the one that's in the market is they did it.
That's right. That's right. And you wonder,
that's
though,
very important.
But how do you get support? I mean, what do you even do with it? I mean, I hear what you're saying. I have my ideas, as everybody I'm sure is listening has their ideas. But how do you go one step further? Like, is it such an uphill battle that only the strongest survive? Or is it?
Well, not necessarily. You know, in bringing your product to market in my book, I describe a testing procedure that I recommend and that I did. Rather than go out and spend thousands of dollars on a patent and going out and borrowing on your house and things, there's a way to test your product before you ever do that. You test your product by your friends and relatives first, and you test it by only committing a certain amount of funds, like in my case, only $500. I basically made 200 of them, and I sold them. And I waited to see if anybody wanted more. The phone rang. I made 500 and sold them. And now it's 15 years later, we've sold 3 million. That's making a long story short, but still, if you test, I had about 3 or 4 ideas, just like you, before I started Clippies. But Clippies was the most inexpensive, and it seemed like a real good idea. But you start hearing things like, you're going to make a million. This is fabulous. And if you do have enough money to go to the proper trade show, you'll know by the end of the show if you have something. You'll have people like we did in line with dollar bills in their hands, and you'll sell out completely. And then it's very encouraging. Then you can go forward. But if you come out with a product that doesn't do well, you haven't put your life savings in it. You've tested it first. You test prices. You test everything about the product. No one knows what will sell. A very interesting story at one of my trade shows. I was next to a guy, and we were talking about what will sell and what won't sell. And he said his very first trade show, he had a lithograph process for paintings. He said they were absolutely beautiful, and they had ordered a whole bunch of them. They had got this process down where it looked like a very, very expensive painting. Even brush strokes and everything was just perfect, and they just knew they were going to sell a ton of them. Next to him was this guy who had the ugliest looking little doll with hair that stood straight up. You may remember they were troll dolls, right? And he felt sorry for the guy, and he told him, you know, this is your first show. Don't be too worried if you don't get a lot of sales. And he kind of patted him on the back because he said that was the ugliest thing he'd ever seen in his life. He said those doors open, and he said he had a line in front of his booth all right, but they were all in line for the other guy, and they cleaned him out and wanted more. He said, well, it didn't end all that bad because he was able to get a franchise from the man, and they expanded very quickly. But the point is, no one knows what will sell. You have to test.
Right. You know, but that, okay, so that brings us to everybody's protection. I'm writing it down on a piece of paper, and you feel like you squirrel it through a hole, and you're going to hide it because you don't want anyone else to have your idea. And then, like you said, you wait a whole year of that squirreling factor, you know, and even nuts get moth holes in them because you know somebody else goes and does it. So what do you do there?
Well, there's ways to protect yourself without going out and getting a full-blown patent. First of all, non-disclosure forms are wonderful. You can get them off the web. They got generic ones that you just save to your computer and fill in the person's name and the date and information every time. And anybody you're talking to for a prototype or a new manufacturer, you simply have them sign that, and it is enforceable. The second is what they call a provisional patent. Some of the older people may remember many years ago, people used to put their ID in an envelope and seal it and mail them to themselves.
Yes.
And that would kind of prove that when, well, the patent office decided they needed to get into the act, and it's very inexpensive. I think last time I looked, it was under $100, but you have to, you know, they change fees constantly, so you have to go look. But it basically, online, you do a crude drawing, and you describe your product, and that dates the time that you actually came up with the idea. That gives you a year to file a patent or a regular patent protection. And you also, if you're awarded the patent, you get the benefit of that the date you filed the provisional patent. So that if you went to somebody a month or two after you did that and they tried to copy you, well, you have them because you have that registered with the patent office, and you didn't have to spend $10,000 on something that you're not sure is going to sell. So there are other ways. You also have a strong brand. You register the name of your company. You get your website. Coca-Cola, for example, has a trade secret. They don't want it patented because everybody can – patches are issued and people can see them. A trade secret, Kentucky Fried Chicken, et cetera, they don't want it shown to everybody. So depending on what your product is there's many, believe it or not, there's many, many products out there that have never patented that made a fortune for the person. The best safety valve safety apparatus for your company and your product is sell the most, the fastest. If your name becomes synonymous with a product, then you'll get the market share. An example is Pass the Scotch Tape. Well, Scotch is a brand. Let me make a Xerox of this. They don't say let me make a Sharp or let me make a Minolta. Right. You know, they say let me make a Xerox because they were the first. You become synonymous. Yeah, you still may get ripped off, but you're going to get the majority of the business because today when somebody wants an ID holder that's custom made, they say, let me make a Clippies of this. Even if a small percentage go to another pen manufacturer, just the idea that they're saying, let's make a Clippies of this, it defines what that product is, and I'm going to get the market share forever unless I screw up big time, you know.
Right. And that's definitely interesting because when you say once you get it down on paper, you don't want it sitting in your living room. Like you said, submit it. And then that'll almost be like your journal, your ticking year journal. It'll keep you going because you know you have that year to be able to accomplish that goal, correct?
Yes. But I would like to caution there are some proposed changes in the patent laws that should take effect in the first quarter of next year. So somebody that's in that would be advisable to move on their idea now or at least keep apprised of what is going on there. It's not defined enough where I can tell you the changes yet, but that's how it's been for many, many years, and that's how it is right now. You want to to protect it the best you can, but I don't advise it. And I'll tell you one other thing, too, that is a little bit different than you're going to hear from most people. But I've been there. You know, I've been there and I've done it.
Right.
If you submit a patent yourself, it might take a while. But what you, the minute you, you know, say you do a provisional patent, say you make a prototype and it sells, people love it, you've worked out all the bugs, people tell you statements like you're going to be a millionaire and we love it and isn't that wonderful and it's so clever, and they carry on and you're convinced that you have something there. When you go to patent it, if you patent it yourself, which there's books and the patent office has a lot of information, and also the examiner is by law has to help an individual. Now, they don't have to help a patent attorney, but they have to help an individual. But what I'm saying is once you send in that application, you get the status patent pending.
Right.
Okay, patent pending you can put on all your packaging, and it tells other companies that you have applied. Now, they don't know if you're going to get it tomorrow, next month, next year, but they hesitate to rip off your idea because if you get the patent while they've got manufacturing or while they have inventory before they even sold it, then they're going to have to pull it off the shelves or run the risk of you bringing suit. And patent pending is not published. So people can't see the dimensions. They can't see the material. They can't see the drawings, the measurements. It still just says patent pending. As far as I'm concerned, there's a lot of products. Now, it certainly depends on what it is. There's a lot of products that I would extend out patent pending as long as I could, because chances are you're going to change that. You're going to change the design. You're going to perfect it a little bit. And if the examiner writes me, you know, had written me a letter saying you need to clarify paragraph 1C, and he gives me 30 days or 60 days to give a response, I waited till 59 days. Because I wanted to extend the patent pending protection as long as I could. Now, these are my opinions, but I said, I've been there, done that. And,
well, it's almost like patent pending is like a non-disclosure for everybody else. It's kind of like for the – well, not really, but it's sort of like a protection for you. It's sort of like putting up that shell saying I'm still under this and I'm okay. So, in other words, like if I have an idea and I'm afraid to make each step out, so my first step would be like looking at that, filing that, and then, doing the non-disclosures for your focus group, but then secondly going the next step with filing that, because you're kind of like inching out, but you still have a protection coating over you.
Right, and I've seen people that later were denied, but they had sold, like I said before, the most, the fastest. And it didn't matter at that point. They own the market. You in this country, unfortunately, you're going to be copied. The best thing to do is to figure out your strategy before and know what you're going to do. There's a couple of manufacturers, like in the motorcycle industry and the automobile industry, that actually hold back inventions until their competitors actually put out something a little bit better than what they have on the street now, and then they bring a new one on there that blows that away.
Wow.
So sometimes you have to say, okay, I'm going to wait a little bit, and when somebody tries to copy me, I've got this drawing, and until we sell all of this first one, we're not going to bring this out right away, and let somebody come out and put the same thing in the store, and then you blow them away by bringing out your new one. And so that's the best protection, is think about what you're going to do if and when you do get ripped off. But I do want to touch on the reasons, a lot of the reasons for going business. People aren't happy with their state of employment. They don't feel comfortable anymore. And sometimes it's great to just, even if you have a day job, to do something on the side, something that has to do with a hobby perhaps, something that you work around the house, a chore that you can make easier. I know the one lady that made an apparatus, she crocheted, and it made it easier for her to crochet. She had a very, very good job, but her interest lied in this, and she did this on the side. And eventually, she did just that, just like myself. She quit her her job, and I mean, she made mid six figures. I mean, she was an up and coming, but she enjoyed it. I also run into lifestyle entrepreneurs, and what I mean by that is people that want to do what they love and be able to make a living. I worked with an engineer that had made a good salary, had an advanced education, and he had some money put away. But he told me, he says, I just love teaching guitar. I really want to be able to at least pay the bills. And he says, I'm just sick and tired of the type of engineering. There's a high pressure. He's a big money, but high pressure. And he just got to the point in his life where he wanted to do what he loved to do. And he did. He was able to do some creative marketing. And last time I talked to him, he was just smiles. He just loved it. So everybody has their own purpose and their own goals.
Well, Gary, could you give us some information about all the locations where we would be able to find out about your products, find out more about you, and also about your book?
Yes, my website, which is www.garybronga.com, GaryBronga, is a blog, and you can also get my book, and you can also sign up for your free tips booklet. And I'll be happy to send that out to you. And it's got some wonderful tips. The book is sold on my site. It's sold on Amazon, sold on BarnesandNoble.com, and all the bookstores can get it if you don't see it in the bookstores. It is on Kindle and Zook, the readers, most popular readers. So any way you like to purchase books, I'm starting to go e-books myself. They're just so much easier. And if you're interested in something, you can push a button, and within 30 seconds, you can be reading it. It's just amazing. Mm-hmm. And you can call our 800 number and talk to me anytime, 800-385-0014. I'd be happy to discuss your idea and how any recommendations for you to proceed.
Thank you so much for that information. I know the listeners would appreciate that. I do have one other quick question, and then we'll move forward. What do you do when it's not a product? Like, how do you protect your idea? Like, with trade, you have patents, you have trademarks, you have your idea, you have your names. What does all of that mean?
Well, depending on your product, a trademark is you can have a TM, which means trademark, or you can have a circle with an R, which is a federally recognized. There's a little fee, and you submit it. You'll see somebody will have, for example, Coca-Cola, and they'll have a circle with an R. That means that that's their logo. No one else can use it. You can do TM if it's something that's, it could be like, you know, Joneses such and such. Well, there may be many Joneses across the country, but Joneses of Orlando, Florida or something. You can use a TM, and that protects you in your local area. There's copyrights. When you create a original work in print, whether it be a song, whether it be a book, whether it be a short story, any kind of a poem, anything that's original, you automatically get copyright. But if you put copyright on there, it strengthens it. And also there are websites that you can go to federally copyright it to give you even more strength. But I do want everyone to know that as soon as you create something unique, it is copyrighted by you. Depending on patents, of course, or products, you can't patent just an idea. It has to be a product. And trade secrets we touched on earlier, if it's a formula or a recipe, perhaps you ought to use it as a trade secret and just put trade secret, company confidential all over the document. And you want to make sure that you take precautions that it doesn't fall into unauthorized hands. But if you've done all those and somebody steals it, then you do have recourse over them. The amount of protection is lot depends on the type of product and how easy it is to be duplicated.
Right. So now you always say about going to trade shows, after you've done your focus marketing, you know, with the people that you know, your family, your friends, and start generating some buzz around your product, is that what you do next, is you would go to some trade shows? Or are you still talking about craft fairs and, you know, my child's school fairs, or maybe I'll have a little table in the mall? What ideas do you think about?
Well, what I did and the formula outlined in bringing a product to market, I sold to friends and family in the workplace and people I knew first to get a little income. And I used what I call the campaign, the catalog campaign. And I contacted many, many catalog buyers, which are available in a directory in your library, and I chose catalogs that my product might fit with. And catalogs are wonderful because new products are their lifeblood, and they simply buy wholesale and they sell retail. I've got many, many rejection letters, but I was persistent, and I can't be more strenuous arguing to be persistent. Once you find out that you have a market, a product that everybody likes, then be very persistent. Matter of fact, I like to joke that I actually wallpapered a room in my home office with rejection letters. I spray painted the actual rejection letters, and now everybody calls me that those. But once I got my first catalog, then you get residual income. They'll keep it in that catalog as long as it sells. Then you can use that money to put back into the business. Also, you get into a category. The first catalog I happened to get into was a medical accessories catalog. They had scrubs and shoes and stuff for the medical industry. But once you get it in that catalog, and it's very tough to get it in that first one, but once you get it in that catalog, all the other catalogs and all the stores that read that catalog as competitors want you. So then you concentrate on getting the next one. In other words, if you get in JCPenney's, you're going to get Macy's and Belk's because they're
really
the same catalog. They're the same category. You know, getting it in that first one might be tough, but once you get it in the other one, they're going to look at their competitor and say, "Wow, he's in that catalog. Wow, he's on the cover of that catalog. We got to his number? We got to call him back." All of a sudden, they started calling me back. So that first one is, and that's a great step because, matter of fact, in my case, the catalog thought they were going to sell 48. Now, where they came up with that idea, I suspect it's because other pins sold just as little as 48. But mine holding an ID badge, I knew better, and I knew by the strength I'd already had. They wanted to buy and just thought they'd sell 48. So in the first 6 months, they sold 150,000.
Wow.
So that's what gets you on your way. That's why I say sell a little bit, buy more, sell a little bit, buy more. Don't go out and borrow $25,000, $35,000 because if it doesn't sell, you know, you're out all that money. Go slow.
Right.
Now, somebody may say, well, you said go slow now, but you said sell the most the fastest. Isn't that a – I've been asked
that's opposite, right?
It is a good question. It is a good question, but it's not. You're under the radar until you get to a certain point. Companies aren't going to go rip you off if you're a little guy in a little town in the middle of Central Florida. They might rip you off after you've reached all the covers of all the catalogs, but by then you have the income, and then you want to sell the most the fastest. So, yes, you can go slow, and you can sell the most the fastest.
Wow. It does take a lot of planning. I think I would suggest to everyone to at least read through the book to skim it or get some ideas of the process, because you know if at any time you take maybe a tip from maybe chapter 17 and you're doing it ahead of chapter 2 but you didn't do 2, 3 and 4, I think that can cause some issues. What do you think?
Yes. I wish I had a book like this when I started. It's I've helped several people, and they've found the book very helpful. You know, I've tried to do it in the order of importance, and it isn't. There are times if you have a little bit more money, if you know, mm-hmm. have a good day job, you may skip mm-hmm. your testing to trade shows. We touched a little bit about it. But trade shows, you know when the show is over whether you have something there. One friend of mine that I helped with his business, he bought a I think some of your listeners, some of the people listening right now could identify with this. Mm-hmm. He bought a brand new guitar. Actually,
right.
his wife bought a brand new guitar, a Gibson, very expensive electric guitar, for Christmas. Mm-hmm. And when he took it out and unwrapped it, he was all excited, and of course he wanted to play it. Well, his wife said, "You better be careful. Don't you dare scratch that thing." And
right.
She went into the kitchen and brought a dish towel and laid it over there, and he played it. Well, he went on to work the next day, and when he got home, she had sewed a little cloth together to put on the back of his instrument, because people that aren't familiar with playing guitars, they don't realize that, you know, like rock stars and country western, they have these big
mm-hmm.
belt buckles, and it scratches
right.
the back of a guitar. Well, she made a cloth cover. And he says, you know, I think you have a product.
Right.
And they sewed along the neck of the guitar and the back of the guitar that was protection for the guitar but didn't interfere with the performance. Well, now they have what's called Axe Glove. They sell all over the world. They took that to a trade show, a musical trade show for stores, music stores, and sold every single one. And his wife happens to be from Russia, and on the way home she was crying, and he asked her what was the matter, and she said this would never have been able to be done in Russia. They would have, you would have to bribe people, they would take money from you, they would never allow you to enter into business. So regardless of the poor economic conditions in this country, we live in a very unique place, a place where anyone can go into business for themselves. And if you work hard, it's amazing what you can accomplish.
You know, it really sounds exciting, and I know a lot of people consider this option, but so many people get stuck. You know, how about a manufacturer? You said about how can you find a manufacturer, but I also know now that, you know, Alibaba is getting to be almost as big as Google, you know. So how do people find manufacturers or parts to their items for their, like, prototypes or other ideas that would work everything together for them?
Well, there are several places to get help. There's a Small Business Developmental Council, which you
mm-hmm.
can look at on the web, and usually they're tied to your nearest university. And
mm-hmm.
the community colleges are generally tied in with them as well. That's their business, to help small business operate. A lot of times they have local engineers that can help. Their people go to inventor clubs locally, people that are interested in invention and have several patents. Usually all it takes is a couple of dollars for some donuts and coffee. They meet in a library usually. They're free. A lot of times there's engineers that come, or a lot of times the engineers belong to the clubs. Somebody might be creative writer, another person engineer, another person a great photographer, and they trade services to one another. There's several directories in the library of all the manufacturers in the United States. Inventor Magazine and Small Business
mm-hmm.
Magazine run ads for people that do nothing but prototypes. And bad times are not necessarily a bad time to start a business. And the reason why I say that is some prototype makers that normally wouldn't talk to you now need your business. And some manufacturers
right.
that used to, you know, not be too interested in small runs, now
mm-hmm.
they'll do a test run for you. So, and now catalog buyers that normally wouldn't return your call all of a sudden are looking for that new product that's going to spike sales. So, and history tells us that most of our products, household names that are all over our grocery store and drugstore shelves, a lot of those were started in the 30s during the Depression. A lot of it has to do with necessity. The American people always come through if they can't get a service or a product, somewhere, then they fill that void.
You know, I always think, too, when, like you said about when the recession hits, those brands stick around. It's because it's not a frill thing. It's not an extra thing. It's not a luxury. It's something that the large amount of the population would need. So the more people that you could help with that product, you know, and market it that way, that is it is a necessity. Like you said, you know, like your pen, that is a necessity for the people that wear that. It's not a luxury because it's not something that you're sticking all these jewels that got to go around your arm to hook onto your, you know what I'm saying, to hook onto your purse,
right,
and blah, blah,
right,
blah. It's basic. It serves a purpose. So if people have an idea of something that serves a purpose that is very important now, as you found, you know, going through a recession time, and it solves that solution, then that's a good idea.
Solving a problem is a very good way to come up with an idea. Also, saving time. People just don't have the time that they used to. And if you can save time, if you can make a chore quicker, you may have you something there. And if you do the proper testing, you don't spend a lot of money. And use it as a sideline first, because there is, wherever you're employed, you're not safe. I don't care what your occupation is, you're
right,
not safe. And you need something that you can expand to in an emergency.
And that is the absolute truth. I mean, I even see physicians these days, and they're just leaving their professions also. Granted, they love healthcare, they're just finding a different way to deliver it. You know,
right, and there's where the time factor is greatly illustrated. A physician can only see so many people in a day. I don't care if they line them up for them, they put them in the rooms,
right,
they do whatever they can, but he or she is only one person, and they can only see, even if they work sun up to sun down, they can only see so much, and that's their limit. And that's why physicians make investments. That's why they buy buildings and office buildings and apartments and stuff, because they just don't have the time to increase their income. So keep that in mind, that you need, and that's why I like products. While you and I are talking, there are stores all across the country and all across the world, actually, that are selling Clippies, and they're emailing and faxing orders to us, and I haven't done a thing. Other than talk to you.
And
so
you know, that's
what I,
yeah.
Yeah, that's why I like products. Now, there, you can make money with services. However, the secret to making money with services is also getting a product to go with that service. I worked with a guy that was a tile installer, and he said, well, what in the world could you do to increase? I said, have you ever thought about publishing some e-books about all the germs and what happens,
yes,
what is under carpet,
yes,
and what are the advantages to going to tile? And I said, even if you only get 99 cents for it, that's 99 cents, plus that customer is liable to come to you when the carpet is worn and needs to be replaced. And he did. He's been successful with it. So even if you do a service, there's a product tie-in. If you think about it, there's a way to tie in a product, and you can get an extra income stream.
I think you also find that your product can also just be your experience or your knowledge, and you can put that, as you said, in an ebook. I know for myself, I'm a dental hygienist, and you know, I started that in the early 70s. And like you said, there's no way, no shape, that you can see more than 4 kids in an hour or 2 adults. And
right,
I even had it down to that, where most offices I would go to, they said, we'll give you 2 children in an hour, or we'll give you 1 adult for an hour. Well, I had gotten it so tight and so concise by having an assistant help me and do this and do that, and having, you know, voice recognition stuff, and it would document it. So I was so multitasked out that I had it down to the lowest factor, 4 kids in an hour. I was going nowhere past that. I was maxed out.
Right.
So
or say, for example, you publish the best way to pick out the things to look for that type of care, the advantages,
right,
and disadvantages for that. Counseling, offer counseling so much an hour to advise what type of care that they needed. There are ways to make money. I just recently counseled a couple. He made a very expensive apparatus that I think it was a generator or something like that that was pretty expensive, but the main expense came from the installation, and he wanted to know how he could install it and how he could sell it through ads and different things. And I came up with the idea. I said, one thing you might want to consider is selling the plans.
Yes, and that's true too.
Right, giving them the list to go to the hardware store, how many 2x4s this, what size that, and selling the plans in magazines and ads and other and catalogs like, you know, Popular Mechanics and whatnot. And that way you're not outlaying all the money to manufacture that, and that's work for them. So you just have to think of a way to put a spin on an idea.
I think if we have had the questions, everyone else will also. Like my son was doing a patio the other day and laying down tile outside. And I said, did you dig it up? Did you level it out? He said, yeah. And then he said, then he put his sand down his tile. I said, okay, but did you put a tarp under it first? And he says, what do you need that for? I said, so the weeds don't come up through the sand. You know, something so simple as that, but they still don't know it. Not we assume everybody knows everything, when in actuality,
right,
you know, maybe 200 people around you know. Okay, so granted, you're talking to the choir. They all know that, you know. But if you talk and you know something, maybe those people that don't even know what a church looks like and they live 100 miles away, maybe they would be interested in knowing something about that.
Sure. That's a great point. That happens a lot. That's very frequently the case.
Well, we're coming to the last 15 minutes of this show, Gary. So I wonder if you could please give us a lot of tips, maybe just say, okay, this is what I think of first, and maybe this second, and maybe this third, and this is the really big thing we could finish with is my biggest problem was.
Well, the biggest expense in business is mistakes.
Yes.
And bringing a product to market, I try to teach the person how to limit the mistakes. You can make a lot of small mistakes, but you don't want to make a big one. And in the book, I go on to tell somebody how to check references, how to just differentiate between, you know, a good deal and a bad deal. And you're not going to be able to do away with all mistakes, but if you follow that, you will learn how to keep from making large mistakes, the kind that take you out of business. That's the number one thing. You don't want to make mistakes. I also teach you how to go slow, how not to borrow, how to be self-reliant, and especially if you have a day job that's paying the bills, you just simply
right.
put back into business what you make. And
mm-hmm.
You don't have to go in debt. I mean, I'm proof of that. I started with $500 and a computer, and I like I say, we've sold $3 million. If I had went out and borrowed everything and had a real slow month, I may not have made the payments and could have went under. But in the very beginning, if I had a great month, that was a great time to celebrate. If I had a lousy month, I'd just say, well, I didn't do too good this month. And then next thing you know, the sales came and everything. I did a lot of press releases. I show you how to use those to your advantage. And I do show you the rewards that you can obtain from press releases. I once got into the newspaper. They love ideas. They love little people that, you know, in their town that come up with big ideas. And that's a newsworthy item. It was picked up by the paper, and I got all kinds of benefits. I got discounts for shipping. Three banks called me. They came to my – I asked for an appointment. They came to my office. They sat down in front of me and said, is there anything we can do for you? And I said, no, not really. I don't borrow. And they said, well, how about a credit line? And I said, well, I don't really need it. And they said, well, you don't have to use, you don't, it doesn't cost you anything if you don't use it. So I got two banks gave me $50,000 credit lines. If I had went to their bank and sat there and asked them, they'd have said, you're crazy. We're not going to loan you. But
right.
because I wasn't looking for it. So if you do the steps that I outlined, it's possible, and it's amazing. It is amazing.
You know, there's so many tips that everyone can get from Gary's book. I would highly encourage you to get that book and just go through each chapter and pick out. It's not like you're going to sit down and read a book like a textbook. Gary's book is not like that. It's very concise. It says, here's the question, here's the answer, and here's what you need to look at further. It was very, very basic. There's not a lot of fluff. Not sort of like, well, you know, I think it looks really nice outside, you know, but then there's a little glisten on the leaves and blah, yada, 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 and you still didn't want to know that. All you wanted to know is that, do I need my umbrella? So Gary's book is really great in getting the point across. So if you're looking at, if you have an idea, if you've sketched a lot of napkins, if you have a lot of little pieces of paper that you squirreled away in, you know, your underwear drawers of your ideas so nobody would find them, maybe this would be the time to pull a few of those out and see how they could run through, you know, set them down next to the book and see how they'd run through all of those steps that he has already outlined for you and if that would be able to work.
And I also have ideas that are, you know, that are big ideas that are very valuable, and I have little ideas that I learned that are just that were passed on from people that I've met through the years. One that comes to mind is if you're coming out with a new product and you're not sure what color to make it, a person gave me a great hint. He said, go to a department store, go to the women's clothes department, and especially when the new season is coming in, and just look. Next year's colors are popping out because they spend, if not hundreds of thousands, they spend millions determining what is going to be next year's hot color. And there you get it for free. You just stand there and look and say, one year it was a mauve, and 1 month it was black, and 1 month it was, you know, and it's just amazing because they pop right out from the racks. So, I mean, this little book can save thousands. I wish I had had it when I started.
And that's definitely the truth about looking at what's in the market already and have something complementary. It's sort of like if I'm designing a new purse, I'm not going to make my purse fuchsia if everything this season is black, you know, because I might not sell with it, although you can always go uphill and say it's complimentary, but you may want to maybe ride that pony too.
Yeah, and little tips like that are very important. They can save you a lot of time and money. You can learn eventually. You can, you know, get tips of your own and what works. Like I say, the trade shows, I do a chapter on trade show. I've done hundreds. I once did 27 trade shows in 24 months.
Oh, goodness.
And I mean, I didn't even know what city I was in half the time. I'd wake up in the middle of the night. But it was such a great experience. I learned so much. I even did a trade show in Chicago with none of my, and all of my stuff didn't arrive. Nothing arrived.
Oh, goodness.
And I stood at a trade show booth with my briefcase and a few samples that I brought with me on the plane, and I sold enough to cover the cost of the show.
You know, and that's definitely important, too. People think they lay out money, and it's always constantly going in that one direction, one-way sign. But when you start making sales, a lot of that is deductible. You're able to, like you said, you sell something and you put it back in.
Right. And the benefits of having your own business, the deductions you can take, your business buys a lot of things that you use for your business, and your travel and whatnot comes before taxes. In many cases, your insurance is a business expense. So there are everybody, in my opinion, everybody should have a business on the side. This day and age, everyone should, whether it be something they discovered in their hobby, something they discovered at their place of employment like I did. I hear wonderful ideas, and I even devote a chapter on coming up with an idea. It's amazing the ideas that I hear from people. It's just wonderful how creative, and ideas are in every room. It's just unlimited.
Well, you know, the other thing, too, I had a question about is when you say trade shows, And how do trade shows and social media work into getting a product to market these days?
Well, social media is becoming more and more important. I have several thousand followers on Twitter, and I also, you know, I let them know I'd be on today, and it is a great way to get the word out.
Right.
The trade shows, you're there. People are there to do business. You're going to be talking to the president, CEO, owner, or buyer for that company right across your table. That person may never take your phone call in your regular work week, and there they are. They've flown a long way to do business. They're in a business frame of mind, and many, many deals are done face-to-face. Now, letting people know you're going to be there and spreading the word and building relationships through social media is very important as well, but it's still very important face-to-face.
You know, I absolutely believe in face-to-face. You could sit there and say, my product didn't work because I mailed them all these letters, I sent them a ton of emails, and I called them 100 times so they don't want me. And it's like, maybe not. You know, maybe all of those, 100% of those, you just didn't get to the person on the day that they had a minute to talk to you. So it's
right.
Being persistent.
Also, I would like to point out that owning a business gives you a platform. It's a platform to stand on. It's a platform to be heard. Most people are members of their Chamber of Commerce and other organizations, their churches, and their organizations. Being a business owner is a way to help influence your communities. It gives you a place to stand. You're a business owner. You're a president. You're an owner. You're CEO. You're founder, and you touch lives. You touch lives of your employees. People, in my case, they were able to put their kids through college because of the job. Manufacturers were able to make money. The freight carriers made money. The stores made money to their sales, and their salespeople made money. To create some wealth from a idea that you drew on a piece of paper is a wonderful feeling, and it is possible. I want to get it across to those listening to us right now that it's something that you don't have to put in a drawer, that you can proceed in, and you can be successful. And it is amazing how you touch lives in ways that you never thought.
Well, I'd like to thank you, Gary, today for being our guest. And if you could give our listeners all of your contact information on how they could find out about your product, about your book, and how to contact you and what you offer.
Thank you. It's GaryBronga.com, GaryBronga. And that's my blog, which has some tips on it. I also give away the 48 Great Tips for Bringing a Product to Market from Your Home, an e-booklet for registering. And my book is sold both on that site, and it's sold on Amazon, sold on Barnes & Noble, and all your bookstores can get it. And also, if you have any questions, you can email me at admin@clippeze.com, which is CLIPEZE.com, or call us at 800-385-0014. And I work with entrepreneurs all the time. I'd be happy to discuss your ideas.
Thank you so much for being on the show today. It was wonderful. You know, now you have my head going, so I have to go back to my little pieces of paper and post-it boards to see what I'm going to do.
Okay. Well, thanks for having me.
It was such a pleasure for you being with us today. So I'd like to thank Gary today. And tomorrow, I would like to welcome you to join us on our next show. And we'll be talking about the next great unique idea that might be coming across my desk and how that might work for you in developing your product or your idea, or maybe a product or idea that you need. And you just never know what we're going to talk about. If you have any ideas that you have not heard on the show so far, please feel free to submit them at outoftheboxhealthcare.com. Just go to the Contact Us page and send me an email. Thank you so much for being with us, and until tomorrow.